The sports media industry is highly competitive and changing by the minute. It used to be that in order to break into the industry, you needed to start at the bottom and work your way up. But why does that have to be the case? This was the question Jessica Smetana asked herself as she was completing her FTT degree and had aspirations of working in sports media. In this episode, Jessica talks about her journey from Notre Dame to being the producer and co-host of several different podcasts and sports radio programs. How has the industry changed in her 6 years of being in it, and where does she see it going? What do students need to know if they want to work in sports media now? Jessica has the answers. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of You're Probably Okay. I'm so excited to host today's guest, sports media producer Jessica Smetana.
Whichever one works.
Jess was a FTT major here and is now the producer of the Dan Le Batard Show and the on-air talent. She also co-hosts Off the Looking Glass with Kate Figgin and the Golic and Smetty Show with DraftKings, which is, I think, is a really cool thing we'll get into a little bit later.
Yes.
So she's no stranger to podcasts, so there's no pressure on Lucy and I. Obviously, this has been a well-oiled machine all season, and to kind of end with somebody who knows what they're talking about probably should have started with her. Hindsight's 2020. But I'm sure you're equally excited.
I am.
Good.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for sitting down with us.
It's nice to be back on campus in this brand new building that didn't exist when I was a student.
I know. And how was the journey to getting a granola bar today?
The iPads, yeah, I was not expecting to have to like type in kind bar on an iPad downstairs to get a kind bar, but that's just, you know, a sign of the change in technology, sign of the times.
Yeah. It's good. It's all for the best, right?
Yeah.
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 Tell that to the 56 alum who's not going to be happy about it.
Right.
So, Jess, you are kind of in the sweet spot in life where you're probably going to about 5 weddings a year.
Yes, actually. 5 is perfect.
Yeah.
That's how many I have next year.
Exactly.
So far.
Yeah, I know. I'm no stranger to that. In your 20s, it's wedding season.
Yep.
So I understand this past weekend you were actually at a high school friend's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And she had made the comment to you. You were telling me, she said she knew you were going to go into what you're into now. And you have this great comment of saying, I didn't necessarily know what, but I knew why. So when it came to working in the sports industry, I feel like that's a sentiment a lot of students have in arts and letters. They sort of know why they like what they like and why they want to do what they want to do, but they don't exactly know the what, and that's the hardest part to figure out. So if you would, tell us a little bit about your college journey into FTT, making the jump from Clemson to Notre Dame, and then eventually finding a passion in sports media.
Yeah, so that's spot on. I think since I was a really little kid, I knew I wanted to work in sports, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just liked sports, which is a pretty simple-minded, like, I like sports, but I have no idea what that means. So I went to Clemson my freshman year, like you mentioned, and I transferred into Notre Dame as a sophomore, and I became a FTT major, and I minored in photography, which I thought was a nice compliment, learning some of the technical side of producing and cameras and all of that. But I had no idea when I started out in FTT what career path I wanted to go down. There was a lot of options, it seemed like. There's obviously like the traditional local news route where you start at the bottom rung in a small market and then work your way up, becoming like a anchor or whatever at a bigger market. There's the writing route. I didn't really want to do that. So I was kind of like unsure what I wanted to do. So I was, as a student, I started out pretty early on working for Fighting Irish Media, my sophomore year, which at the time was called Fighting Irish Digital Media. So there was a rebranding.
It was a mouthful. So they had
to
rebrand.
So now it's FIM. And so that was a great opportunity for me to learn how to do a bunch of different things, which helped me narrow down, not so much like what I wanted to do, but what I didn't like, which I thought was important at the time. Yeah. If you learn that you hate something, it helps you hone in on things that you like. And I knew I didn't like certain things that I was doing. Like, you know, I didn't want to be a camera person at sporting events. That just wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to like lug equipment around. I knew that I liked doing the highlight packages and stuff like that I did at FIM. I really liked a lot of my media classes where we were learning about like certain films, and I liked my journalism classes, so that kind of helped like help me figure it out. But yeah, when I graduated, I had no idea what I was gonna do, and I still like thinking back, like I don't think I even knew what I do now was a job like 6 years ago, because media obviously is changing really fast. Technology is changing really fast. All these different companies are merging or going bankrupt or whatever it is. So yeah, it was hard being a senior at Notre Dame and not having a clue what I wanted to do. And most of my classmates were, you know, business majors and had jobs lined up for years, and they were all planning their post-grad lives in New York and Chicago. But I eventually figured it out and got my first job in New York at a media company called SB Nation, which is owned by Vox Media. So I probably jumped ahead there in your questions.
Honestly, you just answered the question I was about to ask you, but
I want to back up too real quick, because not a lot of people, especially our audience, who's current students mainly, how were you able to get past the swim test?
Yeah. Okay, so I just found out that you guys don't take the swim test anymore.
I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you're dating yourself, Jared.
I didn't know about the swim test either. I didn't go
really
there. I went to Purdue.
Well, when I was a freshman, so I went to Clemson my freshman year, so I didn't have to do this, but all my classmates did.
Mm-hmm.
You had to take a swim test.
Was it like,
it was pass fail. I think it was at the Rock.
What does fail mean? Drown?
Fail means you gotta do it again. And everyone like lined up and swam a lap.
That, like, in case you fall into like St. Mary's Lake or something.
I think that is,
are you kidding?
That's actually why. And then there was also a PE requirement, which I found out you don't have that anymore freshman year. Yeah. So I didn't have to do either of those things. So, and I also, like, this is the least Notre Dame thing about me. I never lived on campus, which is sacrilegious, like, shocking.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Were you ever affiliated with the dorm or?
No, I had like a lot of girlfriends that lived in certain dorms, but yeah, I never lived in one myself. I lived off campus. I know now you have an on-campus requirement for 3 years.
I know a few transfer students who have gone, because of COVID, they've just moved straight off campus.
Yeah.
And so it's quite common now.
Well, I was a trailblazer, I guess.
Yeah.
You were ahead of your time.
Set the tone.
You were ahead of your time. That's what I've always said about you.
Yeah, there you go. Living off campus.
Okay, so Jessica, you did something that would make most Notre Dame students panic when you were a senior and didn't have a job lined up.
Yes.
But when you talk about
I was panicking.
Okay. Okay, well, it doesn't show, because whenever we've talked about it, you've always been super calm, and I admire that. And you didn't settle for a job that you didn't want. So walk me through that process. How did you stay poised, or how did you appear poised when you were watching your friends get jobs, making plans, and how did you work through that process in order to land the job you actually wanted? And how did your FTT major help you in that entire thing?
Yeah, so I was definitely pretty nervous second semester of senior year about not having really any idea where I was going to even like live after graduation.
Yeah.
And I remember during graduation weekend, everyone's families are in town and all these people are asking you, like, what are you going to do? Like, what are your plans? And I'm like, I don't know. And like, a lot of my arts and letters friends didn't know either, because that's just not the nature of a lot of jobs. Like, most jobs you apply and they are like, OK, when can you start? Like, hopefully in the next month.
Yeah.
And in business, it seemed like, hey,
freshman, you're
right. Like, we're going to hire you in 3 years to come be an analyst at our bank. And I was just like, that's just not how media companies work. So, yeah, I was definitely like nervous, panicked, whatever. But I just knew, because my teachers told me, like, this is the nature of media. You're not going to get a job probably a year in advance. So after graduation, I was very lucky in that my parents let me live at home for a few months while I figured things out. And I applied to a billion jobs. Jobs I didn't want, jobs I wasn't qualified for, jobs that probably had nothing to do with FTT, but I went on all the job boards and reached out to alumni, did the whole thing. And eventually I got a call back from my then, you know, became my boss at SB Nation. And I think the reason that they were interested in calling me back was because I had experience from working at Fighting Irish Media. So like, one of the hard things when you're joining the workforce after college is a lot of entry-level jobs will say, like, oh, you need 5 years of experience.
Yeah.
And it's like, how does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, like, I did have experience because I worked throughout college. And it wasn't full-time work. It was, you know, maybe 2 events a week or 10 hours a week or whatever. But it was still, like, I had a skill set. I had clips I was able to send them of things I had edited, or, you know, highlight reels I had done VO for, stuff like that. So I think that was why they were able to hire me I started out as an associate producer, which I think a lot of jobs, the entry level would be like PA, production assistant, and then you'd become an AP and then a producer. But I kind of started out as an associate producer. I was making enough money that I could move to New York and support myself. So I did that. And yeah, from there, I kind of worked up to producer. And then I started hosting my own podcast. And then I got a new job at Sports Illustrated. And kind of like having the background from Fighting Irish Media, being able to do a lot of different things, I think was really helpful, because then I was able to like not only do my job, but be like, hey, can I help out with this? I kind of know a little bit about how to, you know, light a set for a video or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Follow up on that, writing jobs, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You had made a really interesting comment the other day when we were chatting about not really knowing how many jobs are actually writing jobs.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little
bit? Every job is a writing job, yeah. I think, in media. Like, you wouldn't think that. So, like, now I'm, like, a professional gas bag, right? Like, I talk about sports probably 5 hours a day on, like, 7 different shows. And you'd think that I probably don't write anything. But that's not really the case. Writing is super important. I almost wish I had focused on it more when I was a student. Luckily, my major in FTT, like, we were forced to write a lot of long essays and research and things like that. But, yeah, writing is... Even if it's just writing a cover letter or something like that, writing an email, like that skill is so important. Being able to communicate in writing, get a point across quickly, accurately, concisely, that is a very important skill that I think is underrated. Even if you're just talking for a living, you need to be able to write a script. You need to be able to write down notes. You need to be able to send an email to someone and get a point across, really.
And do you feel like you were uniquely positioned to be good at that? Naturally or because of...
I don't think I am good at it, but okay. I'm getting better,
we'll
probably.
We'll take that out. We'll edit that piece out.
No, I think that... I don't know how to answer that.
Do you think your arts and letters degree supplemented any of the writing skills, critical thinking?
Certainly. I think that... I mean, there's probably a handful of classes that I could directly attribute. Like, I learned something in that class that I use every day at work. Whether it's like critically analyzing a film or a game or understanding like the media industry. Like, I learned all those things at Notre Dame. So I have to give a lot of credit to my professors for that. But yeah, then you have to like apply it in real life, which can sometimes be the hard part.
Any professors you want to shout out?
Oh my God, so many. Chris Becker, Michael Kackman, Gary Sieber, who's my journalism professor. Karen Heisler, who passed away last year. She was my career counselor. She was great. Mary Jo Kearney. I loved all my art teachers. Like, I really had a pretty good experience with a lot of professors at Notre Dame.
That's great.
I love that.
The industry you're in is super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So many people definitely would love to be in your position. And many of the students that want to be there, they want to be doing what you're doing, but they're not quite sure how to get there and what they should look out for. And the more that we've talked, the more you've really opened my eyes about how complicated the industry is actually becoming, with sports betting gaining more popularity. So much of the sports books are setting their own media outlets. You've only been doing this for 6 years, and you've already seen so much change. Mm-hmm. And you've learned some things that you never considered when you went into it. So what I want to know is, what are those things you learned early on? How did you adapt? Now I can recap all these questions. Where did you see the opportunities? Where do you see the opportunities for students now, yeah, kind of moving forward? Where I'd like to start actually is with your experience at Sports Illustrated and, yeah, the crash course you got on the importance of things like industry unionization,
yeah,
and things like that, and how sometimes working for the big brand name isn't necessarily, yeah, the best option.
I mean, we could definitely do a 10-part narrative series on my 3-year experience at Sports Illustrated, because so much happened during that time. But when it comes to like talking about the industry as a whole, I'm obviously not an expert, but I can speak from my own experience and what, in like you said, in 6 years, like I've seen a lot of stuff go down. But so I started at Sports Illustrated in 2018, and I mean, I don't know how resonant Sports Illustrated as a brand is to students listening to this.
It's pretty big.
Okay. Yeah. That's good.
Everyone's heard of it.
You're not getting them weekly in the mail anymore.
Not necessarily.
Because they publish monthly. But Sports Illustrated, the brand, was going through a sale. So Sports Illustrated was owned by Time Inc. and then sold to Meredith, which is a big magazine brand. And then Meredith sold the operation of Sports Illustrated to this company called The Maven, and the brand Sports Illustrated to this company called Authentic Brands Group. And this all happened while I was working there. And like, you could if you're listening to this, you're probably thinking like, why do I care about this? This isn't important. It doesn't matter. But it does when you're working there and all of a sudden there's all these changes happening mm-hmm. and you're seeing people get laid off. You're seeing the brand shift focus. They're changing output. Like all of these different things are happening, refocusing, you know, now we want to do video. Now we want to do this. This is also something that happened when I worked at Vox. It was like 2016. Everyone wanted to make Facebook videos because advertisers were selling revenue based off of Facebook video views. And then a year later, Facebook or someone admitted the views were all made up and we don't actually know how many people were seeing those videos. And then all these layoffs happened for people working in the industry who were producing these Facebook videos. And so like there's always these tumultuous periods in media where companies are either going through a sale or trying to figure out how to make money, essentially, is the bottom line. And that's for any industry. Like in media, I think it's changing so rapidly because the different models are kind of being tested out still. Like, is a subscription model the best way? Is an ad-based model the best? Like, there's all these different, you know, things happening with the internet now and technology, of course. But yeah, a lot of that, it does end up impacting your options, where you can work, how you can work, how stable you feel in your job and your career. And I've worked at multiple companies now where employees decided to unionize because one thing I didn't really know a lot about as a student was how, I guess it wasn't really happening yet at the time, was how common it was for digital media companies to unionize. Mm-hmm. So when I was, you know, 22 and all of a sudden was like, oh, people at Vox want to unionize. I don't know what that really means as a, obviously my family's from Pittsburgh. I've heard of like the steam fitters, but like, I don't know what this means as like a video producer. Those things all started happening. So I think if you're a student, I guess like the advice I would give, if I can give any advice, is just to pay attention to things like that because, you know, there's obviously unions in Hollywood and guilds, and the Writers Guild is huge. And, you know, when I was younger, I learned about the Hollywood unions because there was a huge strike and all of our favorite TV shows went away. But those things are actually like coming into play for anyone who's working in this industry now.
Mm-hmm. And to expand on that, it is changing a lot. And the presence of the sports books, which you work for one mm-hmm. also.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you see that playing out? If I'm a freshman today, what might it look like in 4 years from your standpoint?
I mean, that's a great question. I think with sports betting legalization, people saw it coming for a while. Like this is kind of where things were heading. And now a lot of the sports book, like DraftKings, who I work for, they want to produce their own media and they want you to like talk about, you know, the odds on their sports book and daily fantasy and all of these things. And so in some respects, I think it's, you know, providing more content opportunities and things like that. But, you know, obviously maybe sports betting isn't for everyone. Maybe there's things you don't love about it. But it has certainly changed I don't think 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I would have thought that like ESPN would have odds on the screen when they're talking about a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just common now. Yeah. ESPN just did a huge deal with DraftKings, who our company is partnered with and who sponsors my show with Mike Golick. So yeah, that has really changed.
Should students be starting to make their own content now? Is it very similar to being a designer where you want to create a portfolio and a book of work? Or if they want to go into that sort of thing, should they start a podcast? Like what are some things?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a student, I would have been like terrified to do that. But I was just talking to my podcast co-host, Mike Golick, the other day, and he was saying that like his advice to students is always just to like make clips. Like if it's, you know, a article that you're writing for The Observer, or, you know, maybe you're just recording yourself privately in your home, like pretending to do a podcast, like.
That's what this is. This isn't actually going anywhere.
That's fine. I mean, honestly, if I'm getting free Chick-fil-A after this, I'm good with that. But yeah, like being able to send that to a prospective employer is huge. I mean, like I said, I would have been terrified to put my voice out there as a student or like start a YouTube. I always, when I was like, you know, in my 20s, I was like, maybe I should start my own YouTube channel. But then I was just too big of a coward to ever do that. But yeah, I do think that would be good advice.
There's also so much social pressure if you like start a YouTube channel or like now like
TikTok.
If you blow up on TikTok.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
That's a good point. But That's a good point. I go back and forth because I want to try to give great advice also, especially to students who are asking me about an industry I'm not sure. But like, are you taking resumes or are you taking clips? Like if somebody wanted to
send you stuff, that's a good question. You know? I mean, I think both. I think clips definitely, like it depends on the job. Like I haven't been in a hiring position in a few years, but I do think that that was something when we were hiring at my first job, that was something we looked at. Like if you had, so for instance, we were hiring an editor and we needed someone who could, you know, edit video. Obviously, your resume is cool because you can see all the places you've worked, but we also want to see how good you are at editing. So, yeah. But if you can start that younger, and I think that's one of the things that is cool about Notre Dame is, like, I certainly didn't take advantage of the photography studios, the video studios, the video equipment. This, like, podcast studio didn't even exist when I was a student. But if I had, I think that probably would have been even better for me. Even if you're not going to publish it online, just getting practice and getting reps with the equipment and things like that probably is a good skill to have.
Yeah. So like the resume is kind of like getting your foot in the door and having those clips to show for your work kind of seals the deal.
Yeah, I think so. But again, like this is not to put pressure on students to like now you have 10 extra hours of labor you have to do per week because that's stressful too. And certainly if you're under stress and under pressure, like that's not a great way to be, you know, doing anything creative.
Right, so it'd be good content.
Yeah, that's a hard balance to find, though, as a student, because I know as Notre Dame students, there's so much pressure on you to get good grades and also have a social life and go to all the football games. And, like, I totally understand that. So
I know. It is hard. They're overbooked. The students are overbooked. And but it is hard to give them advice. Like, if you want to work here, you should probably do this. I'm like, that's another thing I have to do.
Right, exactly. And it shouldn't be at the cost of your mental health.
Yeah.
Like, prioritize that first. And then if you have extra time to volunteer or like have a campus job or something, work at Fighting Irish Media. It's a good supplement to what you're learning in school.
All right. Thank you for that. Little mental health plug.
I get it. I mean, no, I totally get it. Like it's very,
that actually made me feel a lot
very stressful. And especially like the culture of Notre Dame is like so like, you know, and it's not even Notre Dame. It's like the culture of like the world.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't make a certain amount of money or have like a certain job title by a certain age, like you're a failure and you suck as a person. And that's just not reality. Like, I don't like that mentality at all.
Yeah. All right. So, Jessica, I think it's really cool how you've emerged as a rising star in an industry that's extremely dominated by men historically. And you've talked to me about how important it is to find female mentors in your industry. And how that's helped you grow in the industry. You've also talked about how because you're a lot of the times the only female in the room, you have a different perspective than a lot of the other people there and how you think conversations would have gone differently if you hadn't been there. So tell me a little bit more about why you think it's important for females to go into this industry and what advice would you give female students?
Yeah, I think it's not just like women or men or whatever. Like, I think it's just like journalism in general has a diversity problem.
Yeah.
And so it's whether it's women or people of color, like there's just there needs to be more opportunities and more voices heard.
Mm.
And I think one thing that happens when you're like the only person in a room, and just speaking from experience, like in the show that I'm currently on, I'm the only woman on the Dan Le Batard show. You tend to become like the person who has to be an expert on like all things
women.
And like, I'm not. And so that's an unfair position to put someone in. And so I think that that's why it's important to just have like diverse hiring practices and be an inclusive workplace. But yeah, I think like one of the important things that I've learned, and again, like I'm not an expert on this. I can only speak to my experience so far, is that like having friends and mentors and people at work that I can, you know, trust and like talk to if something frustrating does happen or if I need to vent or I need advice. I think that I've made some really, really good friends through work who I can rely on when things do happen where I'm like really frustrated, like, hey, this happened at work. I didn't like it. It was, you know, something uncomfortable happened, or like, hey, this is super annoying. Can I vent to you for an hour? It's important to have like mentors or friends, or whether it's like you're a woman and you're looking for like older female mentors who can like help you with those types of things and navigating those circumstances. I think that that's really important and something that I've really appreciated about some of the friends that I've made through the industry.
And talk to me about how you said that because there's so many men in the industry, they're more likely, men are more likely to cover just male sports, but females are most like women are more likely to cover both, and how that translates into the industry.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something I've noticed. So I'm on a show with Kate Fagan where we cover women's sports and women's like female athletes, women's stories. And that show is like a great creative outlet. It's called Off the Looking Glass. If people want to look it up, we had Muffin McGraw on last year. We've had Skylar Diggins on. We've had a lot of Notre Dame people on.
Nice.
We've made enemies of Gino Auriemma also, which.
Okay. So that's great.
Yeah. Is that great? I don't know.
Sounds like a guy I would not want to be enemies with.
Exactly. So the Le Batard show, on the other hand, like we don't cover those stories enough, in my opinion. And there's just like, there's a gap there between how awesome and great women's sports are and how much they're being covered. And I think that that's something that needs to change. And unfortunately, like we still don't have like, don't get me wrong. The WNBA is huge right now. Mm-hmm. Women's soccer is huge right now. There's like so many important stories happening in all of these leagues and the Olympics, obviously, every year. Like people are really into gymnastics all of a sudden. Like those things need to get covered all the time and year round. And like there's still this gap. And I think a lot of it is because like men are less likely to cover women's sports because maybe they don't think it's as popular or whatever. Like I get into like these arguments with people on the internet all the time who are like, well, the women just aren't like, no one wants to watch. And it's like, no, shut up. I went to Notre Dame where the women's basketball team here is huge.
Yeah.
And probably outdrew the men a lot of the time in terms of attendance. Although the men's team was very good when I was here also. So that was a bonus. We had two really good basketball teams. But yeah, it's just like cover women's sports. It doesn't like just stop it.
But that goes into, and I watched the TED Talk you sent me that Kate did. And when you said people, oh God, what's the quote? It's they buy the stakes and stories, not the, all right. So talk about that a little bit, because I think that is cool.
Yeah, I think that like when you, well, one of the things that Kate and I try to do on our show is like find the ways to connect with people, because maybe you're someone who's not watching every single WNBA game, but like you really love a player or you're interested in a story. And those are the things that connect people to every type of sport. And so Kate's theory on this that she gave in her TED Talk, which is on our Off the Looking Glass podcast feed in season two, is that people are watching sports because they connect to stakes and storylines. And so if you can sell people on, you know, an underdog story or this is a big game and winning this means X, Y, and Z to this team, people will watch it regardless of who's playing. And I think that that's absolutely true. And like a lot of sports coverage is so like the same thing. It's like we argue about who's better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James. And there's just so many more interesting things happening in men's and women's sports. And you just have to get people to care about other storylines and different stakes for different games and different people, and then they'll really care about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just good storytelling. Yeah, and that's what I think, like, you know, FTT and liberal arts degrees and everything. It's like you're just trying to learn how to tell a good
communicate.
Story. Yeah, and communicate.
Including about yourself, right? The way you brand yourself, the story you talk about yourself, why you came here, why you studied, what you want to do. We try to tell students that all the time. A great story wins out, and it'll help trump bad GPAs. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, so this is time with you, Jessica. Has been so fun, and we can't thank you enough for coming. We have reached the final segment of our show, which Jared has affectionately named. I had no part in the naming of this.
Right.
It's called The Fast Three with Jared and Lucy. Oh. It's just three rapid fire questions.
Which Fast and Furious was three? No, Tokyo Drift was two. What's three?
See,
that's what you should name it.
I get lost.
I'm going to look it up.
I get lost in that whole, like, which episode happened first, technically. It's kind of like.
They're not episodes, Jared.
Or movie. It's kind of like Marvel, where it's like one happened before the other, but they didn't come out and crawl. It's confusing. I'm not sure completely.
Oh, it looks like Tokyo Drift was three.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
oh, yeah, number two was the one in Miami. See?
Tokyo Drift with Lucy and Jared.
You guys need to get with the times. This is what all the young people are talking about. Fast and Furious. They went
Jess
to space.
Knows what all the young people are talking
about. Yeah, no, that was horrible.
They went to space. I mean, come on. All right, sorry.
All right, first question. Who's better, Michael Jordan? No, I'm just kidding. All right, what are people not paying enough attention to in sports?
Oh, my God, that's a hard question. I have no idea. What do you mean?
That's the point. These are kind of tough. What do you, in your perspective, what do we not pin it? I'll tee it up for you.
Give me an example of something that you think people
I
are
have.
Not paying
I can talk about this.
I think what you did with the Formula One thing.
Yeah, the Formula One. I think just women in sports in general, how like women don't get enough media coverage. I grew up like loving sports as well, but you only get opportunities to watch men play sports.
Yeah.
That was the softball question. I thought you'd plug the Formula One.
Okay. Well, I mean,
okay,
Formula One is getting a lot of attention. Formula One is getting a lot of attention, so I won't say that. Here, I'll give you a serious topic. The women's national team in soccer had a massive win this year with the pay equity decision, and now they're making equal pay to the men, which is, you know, probably the bare minimum because you should get paid to do the same job, in my opinion, as your male counterparts. But now I think there's going to be a huge ripple effect from that, and I think it's going to set the standard for soccer federations around the world. So
that's awesome.
There's a big story in Spain right now with their team demanding better treatment from their coach, and I think that's something to pay attention to. World Cup next summer in Australia and New Zealand, so going to be a big storyline next year.
That's awesome.
Thank you. See, it wasn't that bad.
It was, though. I had to think about it.
Well, that's
that's the whole point.
I don't like thinking.
Football Friday. She came here to party.
Exactly. Where's my Chick-fil-A?
All right. So next question. You've given great advice for students to follow, but what advice would you say college students should ignore?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think you should ignore anyone who tells you that you have to do something a certain way. Mm. When I was a student, I think there was a lot of, this is how you do this. And it's like, for example, this is how you become a TV host. You start out as a local media reporter in like Wyoming, and then you become, like West Virginia, like whatever, these like little TV markets. And then you become the sports person in South Bend, and then ESPN's interested, or like maybe a Chicago, and then you go to ESPN or like a national network. And I was always like, is that really the only way to do that? Like, there has to be a better way. Like, we have the internet now, we have computers. Like, do I have to move to this like small town to do this? And I felt like that was kind of the advice I was getting from a lot of places. And luckily I didn't follow it because I really liked living in New York in my early 20s. So, I would say be wary of anyone who's trying to tell you have to do something a certain way. I think especially in media, like you mentioned with TikTok, I mean, you can cobble together a career off of TikTok influencer deals. And that was not even a thing 6 years ago.
Yeah. Wasn't a thing like 3 years ago.
No, that's my plan B if this Beyond the Dome doesn't work out.
I totally follow you, Jared.
Call me. Okay. I'll send you my rate.
So another.
I'm just kidding.
You're not billing us for today, right?
Yeah, of course I
am. So another thing I feel like students hear all the time is find something you love and figure out how to get paid for it. And you kind of did that. However, how do you now, it's sports, so how do you clock out and become a fan? How do you clock back in?
That's like impossible. Like, everyone told me, I remember one of my classes with Gary Sieber, we had like this old time news producer in who was like, you're gonna get sick of sports. And I was like, no, I'm not. I love sports. I bleed golden blue. Like, I'm the biggest sports fan in the world. What are you talking about? But yeah, I get tired all the time of watching sports. Like, it feels like work now. And especially like, so I'm watching the NFL last night, and I'm like, okay, what am I going to say about this on the show tomorrow? I'm not just watching it and being like, wow, what a stupid play. I can't believe he did, like, oh my God, what an awful sack that the quarterback just took. No, I'm like, how am I going to talk about this at work tomorrow? So yeah, it's a job. It's not, and it's not always fun. It's probably less fun than it looks, because to an extent, like when I'm on the Lebatard show, like, you have to perform because people are watching you. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, it's not always like great. And yeah, so to an extent, like, it can ruin sports sometimes, especially, for an example, Notre Dame losing to Marshall. That would have sucked regardless of what my job was, because it was a terrible loss to take at home. But knowing that I have to go into work on Monday and sit with all these other people who are going to make fun of me for it, I'm like, God, this sucks. Why do I do this?
Yeah.
This would have been so much easier if I didn't work in sports. But it's also a privilege, obviously, to do something that you love, and not everyone gets to do that. So you kind of have to like weigh the pros and the cons. But yeah, sometimes I'm definitely sick of it and I just want to watch some other show. I'm like, okay, can I watch Dairy Girls for like 10 hours and not think about football or soccer or whatever, Formula One? It happens.
Do you find time to do that?
Oh, yeah.
You have to.
I force myself to.
You have to. I agree.
Yeah.
I feel like I have this thing where I feel like if you want to get big muscles, you can't bench press every day, right? You have to take a break.
Yeah.
So I feel like if you want to be sharp-minded, you have to have trash TV and give your brain a break.
Oh, for sure. Well, I think like burnout is, I mean, I'm among college students. I know it's extremely tough to stay sharp and not burn yourselves out, especially when there's a lot of pressure on you from your school or your parents or your teachers, society.
Jared.
What an ass. You can bleep that out.
We won't.
That's fine. But yeah, it's the same thing when you're working, like, especially because like companies expect you to always be on the clock too. Like they, you know, not, and I'm not speaking about my current employer, but yeah, there's an expectation that like you're always working and you're always trying to like help out and do all these things. And it's like, okay, no, like if I'm not getting paid for that, I want to be able to turn my brain off when I, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's such a good point. I didn't even, cause like for certain industries, it's a very clear, like you go into the office and you like work your like 9 to 5, you go home and you like clock out. But if your job is to be up to date on like all the sporting events that's happening and finding stories, it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Sports never end all year. It's crazy. But yeah, it's also like when you work in a creative field, like you can find inspiration from anything too. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it doesn't feel like you're working. But yeah, I think it's super important to take breaks and to just check out. Like when I'm done with the show at like 1 o'clock every afternoon, I go home and I just take a nap. I'm just like, I need to just rest my brain. Mm-hmm. I need to just check out.
And you're also up at like 7, right?
Yeah, which also sucks. I hate waking up early.
Me too.
It's the worst.
Yeah, college is nice for that. Anyways.
I miss my 3:30 p.m. starts in college. Those were the days. God, cherish it.
Yeah, it's really
like
nice.
The guy in Billy Madison. That movie probably came out before you were born.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Cherish it!
Shakes the kid.
Okay, what is the one YouTube video or podcast episode that you would recommend for us to take a look at?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would recommend, honestly, any of the episodes of Off the Looking Glass that Kate and I have made. There's 20 on our podcast feed. I would recommend listening to those. And they're all pretty evergreen, like can kind of listen to it, whatever. We don't really cover a lot of like news topics, but we tell a lot of stories. And yeah, if you like A League of Their Own, which I had never seen until like a year ago, because that came out like 30 years ago.
Good movie.
Yeah. You're old now. You're the old guy.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. A League of Their Own?
I never saw it until like a year ago. We had Gina Davis on, who was the main character in A League of Their Own, and it was awesome. So recommend that episode.
Did you tell her you only watched it? Like,
no. Actually, I think I did. But we were trying to get to the bottom of the controversy at the end of the movie. This is a spoiler alert. Did Dottie drop the ball on purpose?
You can't spoil alert a 30-year-old movie. It's like
then no one will be mad at me for revealing the ending.
No, like, not at all.
Now you have like not these days.
You've had
you have to
30
like, give
years
a warning.
To watch it. It's
good. It's not 30 years. It's like 28 years. Okay.
Okay.
So 30 would be really old. 28 though, super young.
Uh huh.
Came out the year I was born.
Oh yeah, it is my turn.
Yes, we're a well-oiled machine.
What bad recommendations do you hear in your profession?
Oh my gosh, probably too many. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm really not like a, I don't want to sound like I'm a know-it-all or anything like that.
Well, we couldn't book a know-it-all and we got you.
Okay, that's good. I mean, here's bad advice. Here's advice about bad advice.
Don't believe
anyone who pretends like they know everything, because everything in media is changing constantly. Like, especially, you know what, like young people, I think, have an advantage and have a leg up because you guys know all, you can see trends happening before they happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think like a lot of the old traditional model of TV and media, like those people are still not really totally caught up yet. So you have an advantage there where you can like see something happen before it happens. But yeah, anyone who tells you that they know what's going to happen in 5 years is crazy, because no one knows what's going to happen in 5 years. Like it's... things change so quickly. Like I said, I don't think that my job existed 5 years ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good answer.
Yeah, that was a really good answer.
You're being hard on yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This must be being back at Notre Dame.
Oh, like, yeah, just like the pressure.
You're not being graded.
Oh, my God. Accurate. What grade would you give me, though?
Right now?
Say A.
It's, well, are we on a curve?
No, we're arts and letters, Jared.
No, yeah, what I don't know. What? I don't know. This is, it's pass fail. You're getting a pass.
Okay, that's fine. I'll take a pass. Swim test.
What are you scared most about right now professionally?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I think given the last two companies I worked at going through layoffs, I think I'm always afraid of that happening because that's something that school can't prepare you for. You might get laid off just because, and it might not be because you're bad at your job or you did something wrong or like you're not worth keeping around. Like sometimes you just get laid off because you're a number on a spreadsheet. And so, yeah, I think everyone in media is afraid of that. And like not, you know, not necessarily at my current job, but just in general, like things, this company buys this company and then all of a sudden we're not employing these people anymore. Like that just happens all the time. It's definitely scary.
So let me ask you a question about that because, and that was, I know we're at the end here, but this is a big sticking point for me, especially because before I came back here, I did startups. And when I tell students about that, it seems so nerve-wracking for them.
Yeah.
And it's all about risk. It's, and so what I try to tell them, and this is where I want you to help me with your profession is, I keep saying it's not your appetite for risk. It's your confidence in your ability to recover from failure. So if something doesn't go right, are you going to be okay? Probably, because you got a lot of experience. You got a degree from Notre Dame, which is one of the hardest schools on the planet. You're probably gonna be okay. So can you talk about like how you still feel, even though that scares you, what do you feel, how do you feel about if it happened today, if you got laid off, would you feel all right? I mean, you'd be sad, but would you be like, I'll be all right, I'll figure it out?
I think that question depends on other factors too, like financial factors, like how am I gonna pay for health insurance? Like those are things that like, you know, you don't wanna have to make a emergency decision about and don't have to, you know, you don't want to have to change industries just so you can like pay a bill. But that's the reality, I think, for a lot of media companies. Like certain jobs, you're not getting paid extremely comfortably, especially starting out. And so, yeah, sometimes like that can be a really serious thing that you have to deal with. And I don't know if there's like a way to sugarcoat it, to be honest. But in a perfect world, yeah, like if you have the experience and you work hard, you'll be fine. But I think that this is unfortunately not the nature of media. So I think you have to be prepared to have the worst case scenario, which is a downer. So I wish you hadn't asked me that last.
If things don't go well for you, I'll step down. You could run season two of the You're Probably Okay podcast with co-host Lucy Langholz.
I would love that too.
All right.
Here's one more thing that I think is important that I didn't really think about as much when I was a student, which is obviously the lines between journalism and entertainment are like blurry and blurrier and blurrier by the minute. But I think having the ability to distinguish what is good journalism versus bad journalism, or what's good storytelling versus bad storytelling, where you get your information from, all those things are super important now more than ever. And so, yeah, if you're thinking of like becoming a journalist or whatever, take a journalism ethics class. Learned a lot in that. And yeah, media literacy, important.
All right, Jessica, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today. I think I speak for my fellow students when I say it has been incredibly motivating to hear your story. And we're so fortunate to have you as a part of our Notre Dame network. I'd love to hear about what's next for you. So what are you working on right now? And how can we help you achieve your goals?
Give me Chick-fil-A.
It's going to happen. All right. What's the second thing you want?
I'm not going to withhold that from you.
Well, right now I'm working on all the shows that you mentioned, the Off the Looking Glass, Golic and Smetty, the Dan Le Batard Show.
And where can they find those?
Find those on the Le Batard and Friends podcast network feed, the Dan Le Batard Show podcast feed. You can find me on social media. Twitter, Instagram, all those things. I also have an F1 show on YouTube live after every race with Spencer Hall, which you forgot to plug, which is fine. I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean,
our producer didn't do his due diligence.
It's fine. Well, it's not like a regular thing because there's only 23 races ish a year. So anyways, and that's kind of all the things I'm working on. Just trying to work on like being better at all of them because yeah, I don't think I'm perfect, obviously. People have probably heard me say like 55 times in the last 2 minutes on the show. But yeah, what are you going to do about it? It's just who I am. Like.
Like.
Oh, wait. Keep being you. Real recognizes real. Thank you, Jess, for everything. If you're hungry, do you want some Chick-fil-A?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, Jess.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much. It's fun being back on campus.